I feel like we should insert the sound of a Welsh dragon. Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals Preview Edition. I'm your host, Eric Morgan, and former soccer writer for Howler and Deadspin.
And I'm Evan Davis, analytics columnist for Equalizer Soccer. We are knee-deep in the thick of it with these NWSL season previews. Got two teams for you today, one of which will be joined by a guest later on in the episode, Susie Rantz of Sounder at Heart, to talk about the Seattle Reign. But first, our hometown club, Angel City FC. I mean, where even to begin with Angel City?
Let's talk about Angel City's 2022-2023 performance.
They made the playoffs last year. Nobody saw that coming around the mid-season mark when Freya Kuhn got fired and things were quite dire on the surface. Then Becky Tweed came in and saved the day. Or so the story goes.
Do tell more.
I mean, Freya Kuhn was just never... the team was never as bad under Freya Kuhn as they seemed, and they were never as good under Becky Tweed as they seemed. They basically were about what they ended up being, which was the sixth best team in the league.
I'll give them credit for this. They did get the new manager bounce, and that bounce proved crucial just enough to slide them into the playoffs.
Yeah.
They were going in the wrong direction, and even if it was a placebo, the placebo effect worked for a brief period of time, and that frankly was the fine margin between making the playoffs and not last year.
Yeah, they got outscored in the second half in far too many games when Freya Kuhn was coaching them.
Yeah.
Not always their fault. Sometimes it was their fault, unless you believe in, you know, mental weakness or whatever. And they cleaned that up and did not get outscored in the second half very often under Becky Tweed. Chalk that up to mental toughness or whatever. It feels more like randomness. But they did somehow, after all of that, finish with the fourth best non-penalty XG differential in the league when it was all said and done.
It's funny. I can hear the sports psychologist shrieking at both of your prior statements, but the XG spoke for itself. I gather, though, that you are no more enthusiastic about Angel City going into the 2024 season.
I think that our perception can often get colored by the teams that, quote-unquote, win the offseason, the teams that make the big moves, the teams that capture the news cycle, and obviously that's Bay FC and Gotham this year. But Angel City also really hasn't done a whole lot to suggest that they are actively working to improve the team in the immediate. Their strategy right now seems to be, and we've said this on the show before, sign as many teenagers as possible for some point down the line for them to be major producers. And trade for Messiah Bright. That's basically been their whole entire offseason. Well, and trading for Rocky Rodriguez,
which is anti-youth movement, but a player I think we both like and think is a solid addition. By holding Pat, they kind of did lose the offseason in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly lost the draft. You just wonder with the planning.
As you always do with this squad. And honestly, I'm looking at like my projected starting 11. It's not terrible.
No.
You know, like they're going to get an entire season out of Amandine Henry, and we didn't know that was going to happen until very recently.
Well, if we read more French newspapers, we would have.
Exactly right. I think that Messiah Bright is a big step up at number 9 and provides cover in case Sydney Leroux is not fit or healthy enough in her age 34 season to play consistent starting minutes, and she most likely won't be. Rocky Rodriguez is better as a number 8. Sounds like she's going to be played as a number 10, which sort of fills a hole. And then you have Claire Emsley and Alyssa Thompson on the wings. Like, it's not the worst group in the world. Sarah Gordon anchoring the back line. And then you can still see all these weird places where you wonder how consistently they are going to be able to perform. What is Didi Haracic going to be this year? She was many things last year.
None of them good.
Yes. Will Paige Nielsen still be dependable? How will Allie Riley's age 36 season affect her at right back, even though she was pretty good? Will M.A. Vignola be able to keep up her burst of electric form that she found in the back half of 2023. I don't know if these questions are super settled. Also, maybe the most important one, how will you get along without June Endo and her damaged ACL?
For every silver lining, there's a much larger cloud for me.
Mm.
I think that, like, the loss of June Endo is a colossally big one. I think the absence of Savannah McCaskill and the sort of lack of filling what Savannah McCaskill does raises a lot of question marks for me. I was never fully sold on McCaskill, but not filling in that position. Like, Messiah Bright is not the same player as Savannah McCaskill.
And she won't be expected to play that role because, as Becky Tweed has said to the press, Rocky Rodriguez is my number 10. They went out and they traded for her and spent a lot of allocation money to get her when McCaskill went out the door. And for a player in her age 30 season who is much more comfortable in deeper positions on the pitch, I wonder how fluid a string puller she is going to be.
Well, let's talk key losses. Other than Endo and McCaskill, do you see any other pivotal losses that this team took?
No, but those are two pretty big players, two pretty big producers to lose.
Other than the bit at the end, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the show? Yeah,
exactly. So, look, June Endo has had maybe more of an up-and-down NWSL career than it may appear from the outside, just because her raw talent is so impressive and so beguiling. But she has gone through purple patches and blue patches in her first 2 years. Would the team be better if she had not torn her ACL? Well, yes, of course they would. But I think you and I talked a lot throughout the offseason about positional redundancy. There were a lot of wide attackers in this lineup, and you wondered how they were all going to rotate to be available. And now the picture is a little bit clearer with Endo not being there.
Yeah, that's the wrong way to get a clearer picture. But yes, your point is right.
Well, in the sense of, like, there's no risk of imbalance because you have Emsley and you have Thompson to play the wings. And now you don't have to figure out what you're going to do with Endo or try to shoehorn one of those wide players into a more central role. It's everyone's role now is pretty clear.
I think the loss of Savannah McCaskill is just, I see it as an add for San Diego, but not so much a loss necessarily for Angel City. When Angel City got their backs up against the wall, she was the lone person that everyone turned to solve problems.
Right.
A healthy Sid LaRue, Messiah Bright. I just see an emerging Alyssa Thompson. I see a lot more people who can solve problems, and a more even distribution of problem solving strikes me as, generally speaking, a really good thing. I don't see this team struggling to score goals. I see this team struggling to keep opponents out, maybe a little bit more. Sort of like this yin-yang. And I think what I'm getting at is, I think there's a really high variance with Angel City, a lot higher in my mind than with a lot of other teams in this league, that, like, the 90th percentile performance for this team, like, if everything hits, is really good. And the 10th percentile is really, really dire.
Well, let's talk about the additions. I think we can consider Amandine Henry a legitimate addition because you're going to get her for the whole season. A player who is, you know, one of the all-time great number sixes and was quite defensively steely last year in an environment that she hadn't played in a long time, namely the NWSL. That is going to be incredibly valuable. When,
no question,
most likely the player parked next to her in the double pivot and looking to shuttle balls either out wide to the wingers or to Rodriguez further up is Madison Hammond, who does not have a lot of defensive discipline.
Nope.
She's an aggressive defender, but she's not necessarily always the most effective defender. So I think with Gordon and Henri, there is a fairly strong spine. And Rodriguez, and this is why it's so frustrating to play Rodriguez as a 10. Like, Rodriguez has great defensive instincts and is very happy to get stuck in and win balls. Is she as effective in distributing them and finding seams to play Thompson and Emsley through balls further up the field? A little bit less convinced of that. So I don't know if the defense in the center of the park is actually going to be the problem here.
When I think about it tactically, and maybe this is where we we shift over. Mm. Man, I think we're setting a new record for backhanded compliments in a single podcast, which sort of is the vibe, I think, with Angel City. But let's shift over and talk about sort of the tactical plan. Evan, you've provided this podcast three different sort of tactical approaches, and I'm happy to go through each of them. I think the 4-2-3-1 is probably the right one to begin with.
Yeah, because it's most likely. I mean, it's what Freya Coombe shifted the team into just before she got fired. Becky Tweed kept it going until the end of the season. It certainly provided a much more stable base from which to build than what was going on with a single pivot under Coombe's initial 4-3-3. So it also, I think, provides the opportunity to get as much balance out of the likely 11 that you have. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, do you like Thompson in a strike partnership with Brighter LaRue? No, not really. Emsley has to stay wide, but you want to make sure that she has enough space to run into, so you don't want her doing so much defensive work on the wing. Hammond is now given license to move forward because Henri is there. And then Rodriguez will have to do whatever the hell Rodriguez does. I mean, I think the way that it's probably going to work is that Messiah Bright is going to come short a lot and play a little bit deeper to like hold up and link up and allow Rodriguez to move and crash boxes further past her. Mm-hmm. And have her use that, because Rodriguez still has a great shot and like she's good at like creating her own chances. It's just a matter of her being able to be a string pulling distributor that you're concerned with. So the 4-2-3-1 feels like it strikes the right balance.
I always think about lineup optimization and sure. Just being able to get all of your best players on the field at one time. And any assemblage, and the one that you've presented initially, any assemblage that allows Madison Hammond to not be a starter is kind of a win in my mind. Now, if they use Rocky Rodriguez at the 8 and Amandine Henry for the season, I feel better about this team's chances. It is dispiriting to hear that is not necessarily how this will shake out. I suspect that performances will dispel Angel City or remove Becky Tweed from a job of keeping Madison Hammond as a starter and locking Messiah Bright up on the bench. Bringing on Messiah Bright, there's a lot of player evolution stuff that needs to happen. And in my mind, that means just raw minutes. Mm-hmm. We need to see a lot of minutes from Alyssa Thompson, and I think we need to see a lot of minutes from Messiah Bright.
Yeah.
Sort of across the board. Yeah, the 4-2-3-1 roster as is currently constituted, it is the best possible formation to get the most amount of talent on the field at once. Mm-hmm. Whether or not those 11 are the players that Becky Tweed ultimately ends up starting with.
Mm-hmm.
And also like gives them some defensive solidity.
In terms of personnel, there are a fair amount of unanswered questions about who might be fighting for places that we might not realize. Merritt Mathias has finally come back after a very, very long injury layoff. So now there is competition for fullback places with her in the mix. Their big under 18 signing, Giselle Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa Thompson's younger sister also plays as a fullback. I mean, she's young, and so what her ultimate position will be, I think, is still in development, but she has up to now been a fullback. That's good cover for Allie Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe gives M.A. Vignola a couple of things to think about.
M.A. Vignola, who really did break out in the second half of last season, you wonder about a regression there.
Sure. But Mathias isn't getting any younger. She's also entering her age 33 season. And this is, you know, between her and Riley and like the times that Nielsen might kick out to fullback, that's a very old fullback core in general. What will Giselle Thompson do? How much time will they want to get her on the field? Will she be another option further up the field on the wing rather than at fullback? We don't know yet. How much do they want to use Casey Fair, their South Korean-American under 18 signing? I would imagine she's not going to see a lot of time, but they certainly sense a lot of promise in her. Becky Tweed spoke with the press just this week about Kristen Press.
We love Kristen Press, but oh boy.
It's just somebody asked straight up, like, where is she on her recovery path? Is she available? And Tweed basically said, like, we hope that she's able to join us this year. We're here to support her in any way that she needs, and was more or less noncommittal. But, you know, there's this tingle in the back of your mind that I have stopped kind of thinking about her as a member of this team altogether, but she is a member of this team, even though it's been almost 2 years since she's seen the field.
Yeah. There are just so many unknowns with this team, and Kristen Press isn't one of them. We're just not going to see a lot of Kristen Press if we see any Kristen Press at all.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the tragedy of the end of her career.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Not to pile on. When we think about the raised cap space, Kristen Press is a large piece of that cap space that
still
not available to be used.
Yeah.
And every other team had the opportunity to use a Kristen Press sized amount of money. And Kristen Press was just a big weight.
Yeah.
That provides you essentially negative production by not playing.
Yeah. I mean, we've said a few times on the show during the offseason that Angel City is stuck. It's not able to go out and be a big, splashy, attention-getting side the way that they were 2 years ago. And they do not have the draft capital to start building and developing younger players that would be immediate contributors. So setting Giselle Thompson and Casey Fair aside. And they don't seem to have money to go out and buy a new player. I mean, they did not sign a single, like, major free agent. Like, they extended a lot of their, you know, their roster. They re-signed Sarah Gordon and Madison Hammond. You know, they traded for Brighton Rodriguez and for Meggie Doherty Howard, who is another central midfield backup tool available to Becky Tweed. But they did not get any of the, like, top 10, top 12 free agents that we are all aware of. We're not even sure if they were even in the mix for any of them. And, you know, teams can't sit still in big chunks of their roster. You know, maybe Bright and Rodriguez will be enough of a spark to keep the 11 moving in a different direction. But
yeah,
there is a remarkable amount of, I think, continuity to this lineup that you don't necessarily see in other teams.
And frankly, that can be an asset. But again, it's just when you are so reliant on non-peak aged players to take up huge minutes, I get concerned about the variance of your outcomes. I just think they're pretty unpredictable at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It would be great if the Thompson sisters, if Giselle's a hit and Alyssa, you know, makes big steps forward in her evolution. Again, one of the most promising young players in the league.
Yeah.
But it's promise, it's not product yet.
Yeah.
You know, same goes for Messiah Bright. If Casey Fair ends up being able to contribute in meaningful ways, if Emma Vignola can keep up the promise that she showed at the second half of last year, I think Angel City can fully expect to be, like, if all those things happen, a very dangerous team that is offering real challenges. I just think the likelihood of all of those things happening is like a really bad parlay bet.
Quite possibly. And I think they also need big contribution from Sydney LaRue in order to make this work. You know, you look at the attacking core that we've laid out in this 4-2-3-1. Thompson is the take-on artist, the one who can actually, like, mm-hmm. use the ball at her feet to create dangerous space. But she didn't actually demonstrate a great deal of, like, high-quality chances that she took herself on goal. I mean, there were some pretty amazing goals that she scored, but, like, you know, a couple of them were, like, 1 in 100 chances that she might not be able to repeat. And then you look at Claire Emsley. Claire Emsley is there to provide final ball service. She's there to, like, thread the needle on the final pass in the box for you to score, or to be able to, like, charge down the wing and lump in a cross. She's not necessarily there to score goals either. Bright had an outstanding season last year with Orlando.
Yep.
Was my vote for Rookie of the Year. But is that repeatable? You know, was that a one-off? It's not an unreasonable thing to ask. So LaRue then needs to be an option, whether it's to play a lot of starting minutes early in the season, or to just be that consistent super sub who can go chase a goal at the end of games. You need some dependability with LaRue, and she can deliver when she is healthy and when she's fit, but she hasn't always been healthy and she hasn't always been fit.
She showed flashes last season that should inspire any Angel City fan to believe. Whether she can do that over, I mean, like, God, even getting 1,200 minutes out of Sydney LaRue this season would be incredible.
I think Becky Tweed and the organization would be incredibly happy if they got 1,200 minutes out of Sydney LaRue.
What I'm saying is that's the amount where we're both like, God, 1,200 minutes.
Yeah. Right.
Where you sort of go, right, where are goals coming from? All right, if you're Becky Tweed, what's the nightmare? What's keeping you up at night right now?
Another injury, I think. You know, I don't, I think that it only takes.
Sorry. It's so real.
It's so real. I mean, like, Alyssa Thompson was not in the U.S. squad for the Gold Cup because she had a minor back injury. She is back training with the side now. So that seems to have been a bullet dodged, but I mean, if something happens to Rocky Rodriguez that puts her out of commission for an extended period of time, there is really not a lot of ball progression in the center of that park, because Meggie Doherty Howard is a Band-Aid. She's not an engine, you know, like, she is there to cover up a wound, not actually drive the ship. And if something happens to Henri, then you're relying more on Hammond and even more on Howard as well. Maybe Clarice LeBion has to get more starting minutes, which I don't know if that's such a great idea. So, yeah, I think that they have enough talent to contend for a low seed playoff place with the lineup as presently constituted. But if one significant piece goes down for more than a couple of games, I think this team's in trouble.
All right, let's move on to the silly part where Evan and I reveal our projections for this team.
I think they're eighth.
You have them eighth.
Despite all of these concerns, I think they can pull off an eighth seed.
That's the fanboy in you, let's be honest.
Optimistic, perhaps, but, you know, again, like, you have Gordon, you have Henri, you have Vignola, you have Rocky Rodriguez, you have Emsley, Thompson, Bright, like, That is a functional team. That is a playoff contending team. But one thing goes wrong and the whole house of cards comes crumbling down. So that's why I feel like a low eight seed is right. What about you?
What do you think I have them at? This is one, because we've discussed this a lot, you know, off the pod.
Yeah, I think you got them 10th.
Exactly right. Oh, love it. I have them 10th. I can imagine them going as high as 4th or 5th if everything hits. If everything doesn't hit, I could see it. I could see them 13th.
I just think that I've been working through a lot of counterfactuals in my head. Like, in other words, like, are there 6 worse teams than this team? And I think there are. I don't think Houston's as good as this team. I don't think Orlando's as good as this team, despite Adriana. I don't think that Utah or Chicago are as good as this team, obviously. I'm not totally sure if Louisville is better than this team right now. So that's 5 right there. So now we're...
Not to betray too much, I get how you got to 8th.
Yeah.
There is a lot of uncertainty in my mind. And I look at a lot of the teams that, you know, are sort of in league with them. And I just see less uncertainty.
Sure. And that's enough. That can be enough. Listen, if they finished 10th, I will not be surprised.
And if they finished 8th, I would be mildly surprised. But but like, it's almost like if they finish 8th, this makes no sense, and I admit this fully. If they finished 6th, I would be mildly surprised. If they finished 8th, I'd be more surprised.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what hit and what didn't?
Right.
Things hitting have knock-on effects.
Right.
Like, so what hit, but what didn't hit?
Yeah.
I think the mid-tier of this league, I think, in my mind, and this will come up a number of times, there is a clear top of this league forming. And there's also Utah. But between like 11 and 6.
It's a big old mushy middle.
It's a big old crapshoot. Yeah, it's a big old mushy middle. I think that's right.
Too. Let's transition our conversation to a team that went from uncertain skepticism to a shade of optimism for you, Eric. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, that's right.
We're going to talk about the Seattle Reign with Sounder at Heart reporter Susie Rance.
Susie almost convinced me.
And you're about to hear why. Enjoy our talk. Continuing our big NWSL season preview week, we're talking about the Seattle Reign today with one of the stalwarts of the Seattle Reign beat, going all the way back to when their current crest was their former crest. And that's, of course, Susie Rance over at Ride of the Valkyries, which you can find at SounderAtHeart.com. Susie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start with what happened to what was once known as OL Reign in 2023. Made it to the championship game, finished fourth in the standings, fourth on goal difference. You peel back a few layers, and I think Eric and I were in agreement that this team wasn't always necessarily the most convincing of a NWSL championship finalist. From your point of view on the ground, what did you make of 2023, especially now that we have a few months of time to reflect?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with your assessment. It was like a team that gritted its way to the final. I think they certainly earned their spot there with how they performed in the postseason, but it was a team that, despite having so many returning players, struggled in the final third in kind of confusing ways. Just like something wasn't really clicking. And credit to Laura Harvey. She like really made some adjustments. Okay, if we're not going to be able to score like we should be able to, how can we defend in a way that really sets ourselves up to be hard to break down? And I thought she just did that really well in a way that meant even if they weren't going to score two goals in a game, they could grit out a 1-0 win. And that's what got them to the championship game ultimately in the playoffs.
Yeah, I felt like Laura Harvey just like is arguably one of the club's best assets in that is always willing to sort of tinker and find ways to victory. And so the Reign did it in sometimes really ugly fashion. But I agree with you. I thought despite not sort of ever clicking or becoming an offensive powerhouse, they found something that made them almost impossible to knock out in a one-game playoff.
Having time to sit and look back on it, it makes sense in some ways. I mean, Rose Lavelle played 3 games in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Jess Fishlock was hurt for a big chunk of time. Quinn was hurt at the start of the season. So their midfield that has been really just like one of the strongest parts of a Reign lineup historically never really had time to click during the regular season. When you have someone missing like Roosevelt, that's obviously going to put a big dent in what you do creatively. So the team really did have to adjust.
Yeah, I think we'll get to the Rose Lavelle-sized hole.
But let's talk about this offseason with that third championship lost knocking around in her head. Laura Harvey and Leslie Gallimore then had to figure out what to do to build this team up for 2024. But this is not an original idea. I think everybody is quite aware that the delayed closing of the sale of the team from Michelle Gong's OL group to the Carlisle group in association with the Seattle Sounders has affected who they are able to pursue and seems to have guided who they have actually brought in to the squad. What is your sense of Gallimore and Harvey's strategy for attacking the offseason and preparing for 2024 with new personnel?
I didn't have a chance to connect with Leslie Gallimore about a month ago before some of their latest signings came in. And I would say she absolutely acknowledged that while the delay of the sale isn't impacting them from like a financial perspective, there's just uncertainty when you're trying to recruit players in what is this club truly going to look like. There's only so much you can like say without them seeing. There's so many positives. The Reign are playing at Lumen Field. They have their first standalone, really quality training facilities that now that the Sounders have moved out. So there's lots of positives, but still so much uncertainty. So she absolutely acknowledged that. I think one thing that she noted when we were chatting is feeling like what we just talked about, like unless the Rain were able to combine around you, they weren't an attacking threat last year. And looking for impactful attacking players who also put in the defensive effort that's so important to Laura Harvey. I'm sure we'll talk about it a little bit more, but I think on the surface level, when you look at some of the Rain signings, obviously Ji So-yeon can play that creative attacking role quite well, has proven that in her time at Chelsea. But like maybe that doesn't really show up in the players that they signed, that what I just said of a like attacking prowess. I have some guesses about why, which I'm happy to, we can dive into a little bit more maybe when we're looking at formations, but that's what was on their mind.
Yeah, let's codify the losses that are so critical. You mentioned Rose Lavelle. Obviously, she signed with Gotham FC. Emily Sonnet signed with Gotham FC. Megan Rapinoe retired. Fallon Tullis-Joyce was shipped out to Manchester United before the season even ended. Sam Hyatt also traded to Gotham FC. It seems like Yael Averbush-West has Leslie Gallimore on speed dial. And then at the moment right now, and perhaps you can give us an update on this, Alana Cook is hurt, prevented her from joining the U.S. Women's National Team for the Gold Cup. That's a lot of talent you got to fill if you want to be a contender, especially in this new landscape of 14 teams in 2024. Where do you feel is going to be the biggest impact of loss there? Acknowledging that they have addressed some of these positions with their signings, where is the biggest gap still remaining on the field for them?
I think we still have to see what G can do as an attacking midfielder, because like on the surface, I think that that is a really interesting replacement to bring some of more, like the Rain when Rose was hurt last year, they didn't really have anyone who just could create by carrying the ball up the field. Yeah. So to have that as an addition, I think is really helpful. Honestly, I think it's a real opportunity for the Rain to show who they can be without Megan Rapinoe, because I think so much of how they played was because they had a player like Megan Rapinoe, who you have a certain formation you play because Megan Rapinoe's on the field. And I think it's an opportunity, actually. So you talked about Rose, but I almost think that like the departure of Rapinoe, and they've known this is coming, is a bigger opportunity for the Rain to shift than like any of the other players that they lost.
You look at Megan Rapinoe's numbers, and she was still such a valuable addition to the offense. Just as an older player, you didn't expect to get the amount of production you got out of her, but I hadn't quite looked at her as a tactical impediment. Do you feel like any particular players will benefit from her absence?
Yeah, and I definitely wouldn't call her an impediment, but yeah,
of course, but like she's Megan Rapinoe, she's kind of like the GOAT, or very close. She's goated, but yes.
I think Bethany Balser is the player that's got the most potential to benefit with just who Laura Harvey chose to play in that number nine role. It just seemed like Jordan Heidema is who she wanted to fill that role over someone like Bethany Balser, and saw Balser more as a wing player, and she seems very poised to take over in that left wing spot. So I think it's a real opportunity for her. I mean, not that she hasn't shown what she can deliver in the NWSL, but to really deliver even more this year.
Yeah, we're going to have some big Bethany Balser chat a little bit later in the episode, but let's go back to the country of my ancestors, Wales, for a moment. Jess Fishlock seems to have been doing some heavy recruiting with Tottenham and with Reading, and now Angharad James and Lily Woodham have joined the team. Have you been able to get a sense from Gallimore and or Harvey as to why these two players seemed like a fit for their needs going into the new season?
Not directly, although I think one thing Laura Harvey talked about when she moved Emily Sonnet into that holding midfield role was the Rain have a ton of really solid midfielders, but nobody that just like does that like dirty work in the midfield like Sonnet did, that's like very defensive minded and can provide and has like a defender's mindset, especially when you have a player like Sofia Huerta making runs up the ring. To have some like Sonnet in that midfield was really valuable. So I think, not that it's a like for like, but that is something that James can absolutely provide. And I think that there is potential that the team is exploring outside backs that maybe play more like wing backs. So I think Lily Woodham kind of can serve in that, potentially in that role at left back. And she's young and has like a lot of potential that I think probably felt untapped a little bit where she was in the WSL. So kind of an interesting opportunity to bring in a younger player.
And with Sam Meza, the big draft pick out of the draft in January, where does she fit right now? Because obviously draft, there's such a high level of variance with what your draft picks will turn into. Some can be picked in low rounds and become MVP candidates. Some get picked high in the first round and they wash out after 2 years for whatever reason. Why Meza, and how are they planning to integrate her into the side in these coming months?
It's really funny because they still haven't signed her, but she seems to be popping up.
Yeah, that was another.
She seems to be popping up everywhere in their jersey reveal. I think you can even buy her jersey right now on their website, which is pretty hilarious. But that's all to say, I think I got actually a chance to watch, because I'm a sicko. I paid $6 to VPN to Costa Rica to watch their friendly against the Costa Rica national team. And she came in the second half. And I don't know where necessarily they see her in the midfield, because she can play kind of anywhere in the midfield, but was extremely impressed by her ability to like close down. There's like a certain speed that you see when someone like Lynn Williams has the ball, or a certain speed when you see someone just like close down on defense. That's so impressive. And she, I've never really seen someone like that. I know that the team really believes she's like the future of the Reign in the midfield. Felt like they were extremely lucky that she fell into the second round of the draft. And I know Leslie Gallmore actually told this story after the NWSL draft, where she ran into Erica Wambach, and who said that Sam Meza was the hardest player they've had to play against last NCAA season. Like, I think she's a very underrated midfielder because she can do so much with the ball, without the ball. That kind of goes unseen sometimes, but is really impactful.
Well, let's talk about what this roster is actually going to be in on the ground. I whipped up a couple of possibilities that we can dig into, and Susie, I definitely want to get your insight here. The area where I see the greatest possibility for rotation or change or flexibility is in the attack, because this was an area that the team struggled with. Bethany Balser seemed to fall out of favor with Laura Harvey at the end of the season. I remember she said in a press conference that had more to do with Veronica Latsko's defensive work rate, and that's what they needed in that moment. I told that to a Reign fan, and they said, well, yeah, all right, Bethany Balser may not do a lot of defending, but Jordan Heidema doesn't do a lot of scoring. So what's the more important thing here? You need Balser in the side. She's the most productive, despite maybe a dip in the second half of the year, she's the most productive and most consistent attacker that they've got. Do you sense that she is a priority for Laura Harvey in the starting 11?
Yes, I do. I share my concerns with Reign fans. I feel like Bethany Balser is someone who should be in a starting lineup every game. I just think there's those players that just have that like unique, innate sense of where to be to score goals. And she has that better than almost any, not all, but a lot of NWSL forwards, and has been so consistent since she joined the league. I think that Harvey really values Heidema's work rate defensively in the middle of the field and what she can bring there. And I think that, like I mentioned, the departure of Rapinoe gives Balser a real chance, because who doesn't want Bethany Balser on the end of Sofia Huerta's crosses?
Yeah, she had 0.49 scoring contributions per 90 last year, which was easily the best member of the Reign. I think when the playoffs rolled around, Evan and I were both like, why is more on the pitch now, please? And if you get more Bethany Balser this year, I think that in and of itself is a win. Huerta de Balser feels like a call we're going to be hearing a few times this season.
Yeah, I think it was kind of more of that, like, you put Latsko on the right because you have Sofia Huerta behind her, and Latsko can pinch in. She can help provide defensive cover in front of Sofia Huerta. And then you have Megan Rapinoe on the left, and she plays in obviously a different role than Latsko does on the right. So it wasn't necessarily a Harvey doesn't want Balser on the field. It's just that's kind of the decision she made about how the team's going to win at the end of the season.
Well, I can sort of see it if the idea was to build a defensively stalwart unit, particularly as they got into the playoffs, why you would pick Latsko over Balser, because Latsko is so defensively tenacious. And I don't actually think that Balser is a particularly bad defender as a forward, but Latsko is sort of on another level in that regard. So if that's your objective, then you can kind of see the logic. But the problem is, you still need to score goals somewhere.
Yep.
You know. And so let's take a look at these. I've pitched a 4-2-3-1, a 4-4-2 diamond, and a 4-3-3 with slightly different combinations of players in different places. The 4-2-3-1, that feels right because it allows for Balser and Latsko to play together. But then the question becomes, how do you rotate your central midfield between Fishlock, Quinn, and James? What are you seeing here? Where is the right balance for this personnel? Does James start? And this is sacrilege. Again, kiss my grandfather's gravestone, but does Fishlock get benched at some point? Just for the fact that she's in her age 37 season.
I think the 4-2-3-1 is where Harvey has always felt the most comfortable. It's her preferred lineup,
particularly in this new Reign 2.0 since 2021.
Yeah, obviously 2014, 2015 when they had Keelan Winters, Kim Little, and Jess Fishlock, it was more of a 4-3-3
triangle monster.
Yeah, and they were so dominant. I think that you're going to see a lot of rotation in the midfield regardless, because I don't think Jess Fishlock should be playing as many minutes as she has historically, just because you want her to be able to be healthy and to be her best. There's going to be games when I think you're going to see Olivia Vandergaat in that midfield because she is a ball winner. She's going to win every aerial duel she's in. She just plays a different role, and I think that Laura likes that flexibility. But I will say, and maybe we'll get this to this a little bit more, looking at other formation options. Interestingly, I haven't gotten to practice at all, but when the Reign played the Costa Rica women's national team, they played with a three-back. And like a kind of overloaded 3-5-2 where Balser and Ziara King were the forwards, but were shifted to the left to give Sofia Huerta more of that space on the right. So I have no idea if that is how, if she's just experimenting, but that they do have the players to be able to play in that formation.
I don't think Laura Harvey's ever played with a back three. Not that I can think
of. I feel like she did it one time, and maybe it was the Vlatko era against North Carolina when they had that, I think it might have been the Vlatko era when they had that, ridiculous midfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure if she ever has.
Left side of defense. It never ceases to blow my mind that Lauren Barnes moved from center back to full back as she got older.
I know.
She moved back to center back, and they moved Phoebe McClern out to the outside when later in the season. Do you get a sense of where Harvey thinks is each player's most comfortable zone right now? Are we going to see them sort of interchanging those left-sided defender roles throughout the year? Is Barnes at an age now where maybe she needs to see more of the bench just to keep her fresh? And if so, is Julia Lester the backup now that Sam Hyatt's gone? Sam Hyatt quietly, I think, might be one of the most significant losses to the lineup, just because I don't see a lot of center back depth in this lineup, and she is a very serviceable and dependable central defender that they don't have access to anymore. So where do you see them trying to balance defending needs on that side of the field?
Yeah, they have a lot of defenders right now who can play in multiple positions, which makes it really interesting. Shea Holmes, who they traded up to pick in the draft last year, who can play center back or left back. Lester being able to play kind of in any position on the back line. And same with Phoebe McClernan. So it's like an interesting conundrum. I do think that the Reign were so much better and defensively when Barnes moved back to center back and McClernan played left back. I like Barnes is a legend, and to make that shift, like you mentioned, later in her career is like an is interesting. And I just felt like the team needed someone who could be more of a like quick lockdown left back at the end of the season, especially when you're playing Rapinoe, who plays a lot higher on the left side. So I think it's going to be Phoebe. If I was guessing, that's going to take that if that's the formation they play. And then you do have younger players like Lester and Holmes, who I think Harvey believes in 100%, who could fill in and provide that center back depth.
What's the thing that might be likely, whether it's formation, whether it's a player who is going to get a lot of minutes that we might not be aware of, a player that maybe has a better positional fit than what we're accustomed to? What is going to be the surprise, the tactical or the personnel wrinkle that Harvey could really do? I mean, you mentioned a three back. Where's the curveball coming from? Because I think Eric and I are a little bit skeptical about how successful this team can ultimately be given the roster that they have. I mean, the lineup is the average age of the lineup is pushing 30. Based on who you have in the starting 11, if you just look at, you know, that leans rather old. And even though this is a team that is in a big transitional moment, it's not a team that expects to not be a postseason contender ever, especially when Laura Harvey's coaching them. So where's the curveball coming from that might surprise us?
It's such a good question, and I'm not sure if I have a good answer at this point. I think that the team really does have a solid number of younger players who have yet to like see meaningful minutes with the Reign that could be great, right, strong contributors. I mentioned Vanderjagt. Olivia Athens is like one of those players who just helps the team keep possession, but she hasn't seen the field a ton in the last 2 years. I actually think that last year, this isn't a like out of left field kind of player, but I actually feel like last year Sofia Huerta was as impactful as she's been previously, and the team just wasn't able to take advantage of it in ways that they had been in prior years. And so I think if they can figure out how to continue to unlock her, they'll be a lot more successful. Is the three back actually going to happen? And that's a way to do it. That is an interesting question. I don't know that I can give you a really solid answer right now. Except for to say, Harvey's scheming something. I know it, because she always is.
Those in the know who Ji-Seo-Yun was when she was at Chelsea. She has not been in a highly competitive environment, barring three group stage games at the World Cup last year, in, you know, almost 3 years now. Here she is now entering her age 33 season. It is quite clear that she is going to be expected to be a big producer in this squad. Her numbers at the World Cup were actually pretty good, but that's a three-game sample. We don't know what she's going to be like week in and week out. What do you think was Gallimore's and Harvey's thought process in going after a player like that? And what do you think they are going to hope she's able to deliver once the season begins? And will she be able to? I don't think we know the answer to that last one because she's a black box, but where are Gallimore and Harvey sitting with all of it?
Yeah, I think, it's really hard because it's hard to watch games in the Korean Women's League. So we don't really have a good sense of what she's been doing there. But I think that to your point about like the 4-2-3-1 being Harvey's preferred formation, I think that means that she's not going to be necessarily relied on as like having to, I mean, she's going to play defense, but it's not going to have to, like, she can be, like, just focus on being the creator a little bit more with perhaps two midfielders behind her. I think, though, what they were looking at is, like, she still has the potential to be a really special player, and she can create. She's extremely good on set pieces. She's really comfortable carrying the ball. She's really comfortable with the ball. The team was not, like, as good in possession last year either, just generally. And so to have someone who is, it's just really hard to get the ball off of her. I think all of those things really add up. I have no idea if this is in the back of their mind, but Jess Fishlock won NWSL MVP at 34. So age can also just be a number in some senses.
I was about to say Seattle sort of, and Laura Harvey sort of figured out a fountain of youth thing. Or I would just call it a fountain of your mid-30s thing. And she has gotten a lot out of the aging millennial. And I don't see any reason why that, I would imagine that she, that Harvey has full confidence that she can get that out of Jisoo Yeon.
Yeah. And I think if you have a player who's up for the challenge of the NWSL and feels like they can deliver, and you've seen what she was able to do at Chelsea, I think they're feeling like, why not?
If you're in Laura Harvey's mind, what is keeping you up at night right now about the upcoming season?
I think that finishing and, like, that confidence in front of goal, because they didn't bring in someone who's like a day-to-day goal scorer. They don't have Eugenie Le Sommer back, which would be amazing because it was a great year with her. So I think you have a young player like Heidema, you have Balser, you have Ziara King, who has showed flashes but just not been consistent. I just think if I were Harvey, that, like, who do I turn to when I just need a goal? And all of those players that I mentioned, I would say a little bit aside from Balser, they're not players who create their own chances often, like a Sophia Smith. That's what would be keeping me up at night.
All right, moment of truth. Where does this team finish at the end of the season? With the caveat, we've been expressing our skepticism about their playoff chances, but this is an expanded playoff field this season. It's going to be 8 teams out of the 14. Where do they fall for you?
I say that I'm confident they make the playoffs. I am confident in that. I think just because I think it could be a slower start from them, but this is a team that's going to make it hard for you to break them down regardless. I don't think that's going to change. That's been a consistent over the last year's piece of the reign. Even losing the players isn't going to be different. I'm just going to say that once again, they finished fourth in the league.
All right.
I know, pretty controversial.
Hey, listen, you're in the home market. You know more than
we
do.
I told you I hate predictions, but I'm doing it for you.
The whole point of this is that we are going to be wrong about certain things.
Yeah.
Like, to be able to look back and see how wrong we really were. Evan, do you want me to go next as a guess, or do you want to offer yours?
No.
Because I've been this is my, like, 13th little note card that I've been filling out. I do
possibilities.
These by hand. I little note cards, and I've just been shuffling them around. And I have had on previous editions, I was taking a look at this before we got on. I have had Seattle as low as 11th, and as high as 6th. And so, if I'm really going to drill in the middle point there for me, I think I am going to say, because it is impossible to believe that Seattle doesn't figure out a way to make the playoffs, and if they are able to use the summer transfer window, because frankly, they are a big market and they should be, if they're able to bring someone in who actually can score goals, that's a game changer. I have Seattle at 8.
Yeah, listen, I was actually a little bit surprised to see that Balser really did have a tougher second half than in my mind. I think I hadn't adjusted my priors just because she was so strong in the first half, and that I think it comes down entirely to usage. If Harvey can figure out a better way to get her more involved, and the left side of a 4-2-3-1 I think is the way to do it, then they will have maybe more attacking flexibility there. But I think she needs to be really mindful of that, as much as she has become a defensive-minded coach. Which is just so funny to think about, knowing what we knew about her back in the day. I think, Eric, you make a good point about the summer transfer window. I'm going to say seventh. I'm going to say Seattle finishes in seventh. So we all got them in the playoffs.
I was expecting, by the way, so much more pessimistic from Evan. And frankly, as I listened to you, Susie, I was like, should I just say sixth? No, I got to go with the thing. No.
This is the problem.
Because I hadn't considered, and it's true, Laura Harvey teams are very difficult to beat. And I wonder what the value of a draw is versus a win this year in this league.
Whereas last year it was huge.
Massive. And if it's a little more stratified, as I think we all expect it to be, it's, you almost had me up to sixth and like changing my thing on the spot, but that's not how we roll, I guess.
I like to share these two stats from their 2022 season when they, thanks to Portland, won the Shield on the last day. They did not give up a single goal that season after the 75th minute.
Jesus.
And they didn't give up a single set piece goal all season. And those are the things that won them the Shield. So not the goals, I would say.
Yeah. Defense wins championships or Shields. Nominal ones. Anyway.
Yeah. Those championships are hard to get. Okay.
Yeah. Look, the American playoff system's broken. Winning the season is the important thing. And they've done that.
Yeah. He says, as a Portland fan who watched his team win the XG Shield, which really doesn't mean shit.
It means something to this podcast and to no one else.
It certainly does. Listeners, you can hold us to these predictions at the end of the season. We always love it when you email us or reach out to us on social media. Don't reach out to us about this. We know what we're doing here. We know we're going to look like fools. You do not need to remind us. But please follow Susie at Susie Rants with a Z on social media, as well as all of her work at Ride of the Valkyries, which is housed at SounderAtHeart.com. Susie, such a pleasure to have
you
on.
Thank you so much.
By the way, Evan, before we go, I want to acknowledge an own goal for myself this episode. I called Megan Rapinoe an impediment.
And
that just is an own goal.
Yeah, it is. It is.
With all the charm of a walrus in ballet flats. That was a disastrous statement.
Susie called you out, but I did want to see how deep you could dig yourself.
Yeah, no, that grave is not shallow.
Yeah, it's.
Well, I'm going to go catch a fish now. No, that's the most annoying thing. Seattle people don't like to be reminded of that.
But we will be annoying and remind you to follow us on all social channels at XOwnGoals. That's the letter XOwnGoals. If you think we have an own goal, please email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com. One more reminder, don't email us about the predictions. Don't tweet at us about the predictions. We know they're stupid. We're taking shots in the dark. No one's going to be right about this. Please leave us alone.
This is for entertainment purposes only.
And justice for Bethany Balser.